Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben.
Before you start, let me...
Presented by Brakes Plus.
Okay, before you start... When were you walking out of a Rockies game at 1 a.m. in the morning?
So, during the championship series against Arizona,
okay,
they had a night game,
uh-huh.
And then Sandy and I, about Chicka Bow Wow,
did a recap.
We did a post game show at Blake Street Tavern that ended at about 1 a.m.
Oh,
about Chicka Bow Wow.
It was great.
Oh, I could imagine. Okay, so you're not saying the game got over at 1 a.m. You're saying.
No, the game didn't get over 1 a.m.,
yeah.
But the post game show, the good times, the vibes,
right,
kept rolling into the early evening.
Do you eat a cheeseburger?
Did I eat a cheeseburger? Right. Please.
Good food over there.
It is great food,
Blake Street.
All right, look. Do you think there's ever been a time? Come on, Mark Schlereth. Do you think there's a question mark? Do you think there's ever been a time that I have done a show from a sports bar,
right,
and have not enjoyed the local fare?
No, there has never been a time when you didn't at least dabble,
right?
Yeah,
you sit down, they put a menu in front of you. Can I get you anything? And do you think there's ever been a time in that circumstance
where I said, thanks?
You know what? I'll just have a glass of water, please.
Right. No, I'm going to go to Absolute Beauty and get a body wrap after this. So, right. No, you're like, hey, today, Absolute Beauty, we're playing for the tie. Because I'm housing a cheeseburger.
I'm housing this cheeseburger. Get me those wings. Extra blue cheese, please. All right, let's get to... some question mark here. No, I'm not doing a Tebow question. No Tebow questions.
There's a lot of Tebows.
Oh, God, the Tebowites are out.
Yes.
Led by their Pied Piper D-Mac, who no doubt the moment that Trevor Lawrence has a bad game will be like, you know, you've got a proven winner
right on
your team right now.
Are you going to freshen
up? The Jags could do worse than to give Tebow a shot.
Are you going to freshen up that Tebow tattoo, maybe change the colors on it?
You're right.
Thank you so much. God bless y'all.
If he makes the 53, should I?
You should, yeah.
Should I get more of a
teal
hue to it?
Yeah.
Right now it's orange and blue.
Well, it's kind of.
It's all faded now.
It's faded, but throw us some teal on there. It'd be nice.
You know, somebody said, I'm amazed that you're down on Tebow, seeing as how you have to look at his tattoo every single day. First of all, his tattoo is a shining reminder of what a gimmick he was, a novelty he was. Secondly, do you really think my shirt's off enough where I am looking at that tattoo?
Right.
Seriously,
does this
look like somebody that walks around, hey, you know what? Today would be a great day to walk around with my shirt off.
Sure is hot out here. Let me take my shirt off.
You know?
Just looks like a gravy slide.
Please stop.
And I'm going to go out and mow the lawn right now. Ladies.
I'm taking the shirt off.
Ladies of the neighborhood. Be forewarned.
Yes.
Right?
It's like a freaking parade. It's like the Broncos won the Super Bowl. All the cars driving by your lawn. The lady's just out for a drive, Mike.
Please stop.
Just to get a glimpse. Hey, looking's for free. Touching's gonna cost.
All right, I gotta get to a question here.
Right.
Question mark, before we get to the fan film room. Let's look at one. All right, here's one. Mark, you got me nervous. Are you starting to cool on your belief that Aaron Rodgers will become a Bronco?
I still think there is a legitimate chance that Aaron Rodgers becomes a Bronco. I think there's a legitimate chance that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers don't work things out. What percentage? I don't know what percentage I would give that. There's a lot of stuff flying around right now. So I don't know. I hope Aaron Rodgers becomes a Bronco. I just don't know. So, you hear all kinds of things. Yeah. And I know there are plenty of people there in the Green Bay organization that are, trying to extend the olive branch. But the bottom line is you're extending the olive branch when it's already, when it's already happened. You've already done the damage. Like, you could have extended the olive branch during the draft. You still drafted a corner in the first round. Like, you could have at least, said something to the guy, right? So, I don't know. It feels a little bit late, but I'll never say it's over. I'll never say there's no chance. I still think there's a really good chance that the Broncos retain Aaron Rodgers' services.
Okay, it is time now for today's version of our fan film room.
Welcome to the Fan Film Room. Drew Lock versus Teddy Bridgewater.
We do like Drew Lock, but we do realize we want competition.
Ready to break down the film on the Broncos quarterback battle. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Okay, so what we're doing this week, it's what we did. We started last year. It was very popular. And what we do is we take a look at, all the hosts take a look at the same games and sort of share observations of what we're seeing from a particular player. This week, it's all about Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock, and we're lucky that last year there were a lot of common opponents for the two. Yesterday, we did a couple of games, Panthers and Broncos, both against the Raiders. Today, it's Panthers and Broncos, both against the Chargers. Week 3 for the Panthers, week 8 for the Broncos. So let's start with Teddy Bridgewater. Anything new and fresh that's maybe different from what you saw when you looked at Bridgewater versus the Raiders yesterday?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things. He, in the Chargers game, there were a couple of opportunities where he actually pushed the ball down the football field far more than he did in the Raiders game. And so a lot of times you get into a formation like trips right. You get into a three wide receiver set, like a 3-by-1 formation. And so oftentimes what you're doing kind of as an analyst or what you're thinking about, like, okay, what are the 3-man combos that they run, from either a 3 wide receiver or a tight end and 2 wide receiver set. So what are the 3-man combos they run? And, they run these snag routes. They run these, Charger, Buffalo, a bunch of different combination routes that they run. And so you always I'm always looking at that 3-man set. What are you running there? How are they creating coverage over there? On the opposite side, the one receiver side, Mike, it's usually an individual route. So when they call it, they'll call, like, for instance, in a trips right formation, they'll call X individual. So it'll be X go, X comeback, X slant, X dagger, curl, whatever they're calling on that individual route side. And the opposite side will be, whatever they call. It'll be Buffalo. It'll be whatever the 3-man combo is, right? Every team calls it different. They're the same stuff, but it's different, right? So one of the things that you saw, it was a third down and 6 where everybody that plays defense because Teddy Bridgewater is such a, throw it underneath or behind the sticks and let them run for it. You got an individual route where a cornerback is squatting at the chains. And they threw a go to DJ Moore that went for about 45, 50 yards. It was beautifully thrown ball. Just a beautifully thrown ball. So he has it in him. He just doesn't take the opportunities very often. But in this particular game, he took a couple of nice deep shots.
He did. And I saw that. One thing that also stood out to me was he gets labeled in a negative way as being, Teddy checkdown.
Mm-hmm.
But yet it's funny. Here's a guy who's very effective at checking down,
coming on the heels of a season in which we just blasted and bemoaned the fact that Drew Lock wouldn't take the easy throw. You notice the kind of the hypocrisy there is that, well, how many times did we hear about Drew Lock last year saying, wow, why can't this guy understand that you never go broke taking a profit, right? And how many times were there short, easy completions underneath that he just didn't see or chose not to try to attempt? One thing, you look at Bridgewater, and I saw at least five or six of these where it was just take the snap, two steps, plant, boom, first read, decisive, ball came out quick, and it was a immediate 7-yard completion. Now, can you win a whole game doing that? No, but you always talk about the idea of creating an offensive game plan where you have, what, 7 to 10, 12 easy completions built into the game plan. And what I see with Teddy Bridgewater through the first two games that we've looked at in depth is that this is a guy who will take the easy completion. And what's wrong with that? As long as you, as he can then mix in when those defenses really start to creep up, can he throw one over your head? Can he do it with arm strength? Can he do it with touch? And he showed in the game we looked at yesterday at least two examples of being able to do just that.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that are pretty similar in these two offenses. One, the reliance of 11 personnel. So let me just give you, I'll give you 12 there, and this is 11. Okay, so in the first half, okay, you ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 attempts in the first half. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 of the 18 are out of three wide personnel. So most teams get stuck into this anyhow, and the Broncos are very much the same. They're going to get into three wide doubles, three wide 3-by-1 formation, 2-by-2 formation. They're getting into those. And the other thing that both of these teams do is they'll get into a 2-man formation, whether it's strong or weak, and they'll get the ball, the running back on that side. So now they have a 3-man route combination out of that side. So it's almost like you can condense the formation, get a tight end, get the Z receiver in a close, and put the back plus on that side. And now we can work a 3-man combo almost like a bunch route combinations, right? So you'll see both of these teams do a lot of that, but they're really tied and stuck a lot in 11 personnel in their passing game. And part of the issue, now I'm not watching the run game stuff, but I just know these two teams because I covered both of them last year enough to know neither of them have an identity in the running game. Neither of them do.
It just seems to me, watching a couple Panther games, that they do have Christian McCaffrey. They did. It just seems like the Panthers are more committed to the idea of running.
Well, they may be more.
And Pat Shurmur just.
They may
has no
be,
interest in
they may be more committed. I'm saying they don't have an identity in the running
game. Oh, that's fine.
Okay,
I agree with that. But
so they don't
at least
have,
they try.
Well, they don't have they don't have an identity in that this is what we are. So it's this is straight from Matt Rhule. I mean, I had the conversation with Matt Rhule. He goes, our biggest issue, and one of the things I've learned this year going from college to the pro game is, because if you're scheming your run game every week, you don't have a run game. So now think about this. If you have to scheme it every week, and every week it's different, how do you get adjunct play action off of that for guys to bite? Because here's the deal. If every week your run game's different, if every week you're hanging your hat on something else, well, then you're not truly selling your play action game. So how many times do you see, like, the waggle game where you get the front side and the quarterback is out on the edge, or the naked boot game where the quarterback is on the edge and it's covered? Why is it covered? Because they're not biting
on your run game because you've never truly established a run game. So they're not reading the keys of this is what we hang our freaking hat on and we're going to cram it down your throat. They're not reading those keys. So they're really, what they're really doing is reading their pass pro keys. And you're not actually getting them to suck into what you're trying to show them in a run game.
Well, how many teams would you say, you've covered a bunch of NFL teams and you've looked at, how many teams in the NFL would you say really do have a clear cut run game identity?
The good ones.
How many? I'd say over the years, the last few years, I think the Rams for sure.
There's no question the Rams do.
Okay.
Seattle has had that. They have bounced around a little bit in what they're trying to do, and they've had a lot of running back injuries over the last couple of years.
San Francisco,
without yeah. question.
Minnesota?
Minnesota, 100%. Tampa, completely different than... They are not a wide zone team. They're not a zone team. They are duo. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are double teams across the board. That's what they run, but they run it well and they set their play action up off of that. So they are really good. Let me just look at
Baltimore.
Unique,
very unique way.
Incredibly unique, but they are totally committed to what they do, you know, run. I mean, third down and six for them is a rundown.
Right. Less than half the teams, would you say, in the NFL have a clear-cut run identity?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The Cleveland Browns certainly do. The Indianapolis Colts do. The Titans certainly do. So it may be more than half, but here's the interesting thing.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Because you got me curious. Then for those teams that are floundering trying to find a run identity, Broncos, Panthers, why? Why don't they have one?
That's great that you asked me that because I was going to tell this to you without you asking me the question. Excellent work, Michael. So why do they not have a true cut identity? Because it's not sexy. It's not what they want to do. Let me ask you this. Why will an offense coordinator, let's just throw Pat Shurmur on there, okay? Why will he run it three times and get 2 yards of carry and give up. But he'll throw 7 incompletions in a row and keep throwing it. Why?
Well, the answer is self-explanatory because he used to be an NFL head coach. He wants to be an NFL head coach again. And the only way that offensive coordinators who used to be head coaches get another chance is by having a dynamic offense.
But it's not Pat Shurmur. It's everybody. Like
I know,
nobody,
we're using him as an example.
Right, nobody wants to. Drew Locke said this to me. I was doing this event with Drew Locke, and he goes, and he laughed about that kind of question. He goes, because coordinators want to put 50 on black as opposed to 4 on red. And my thought process is, I'd rather put 4 on red consistently because if we're going to bludgeon you. And, you know, that red is good on that, right? We'll bludgeon you there. And eventually, when we bludgeon you enough, we'll get 50 on black.
If the Broncos don't have a run identity, when you are trying to bring along and nurture a young quarterback, and you don't have that run identity because of ego, and it's not sexy enough, why is he your offensive coordinator?
I don't know.
That's a fireable offense right there. That's unforgivable.
But you brought him in.
That is the height of poor
right. You
coaching.
You brought him in because you wanted to push the ball down the field. That was your thing. We're gonna put now that we got rid of wrinkles. Now we're gonna push the ball down the field. You pushed the ball down the field by design, based upon how you set that up. Not just, hey, we've got more speed than you, let's run deep. That's not how it works.
All right, what did we see from Locke? Specifically, this was an interesting game to watch because it was a tale of two games. You had the Locke and the offense that struggled so mightily as the Chargers built that, at one point, 24-3 lead.
Uh-huh.
And then it was the comeback, Locke and the offense. What was the difference?
Well, I mean, I think the difference, honestly, on the comeback was First, you have to understand who Gus Bradley is. Gus Bradley wants to play very vanilla cover three match defense. And when they built up that big lead, they quit being aggressive. He's not a guy that wants to blitz. So he just sits back and plays coverage. Well, they got a couple of big plays in that you look at young linebackers and young underneath guys, young nickel, young linebacker, that bites up on the underneath stuff in situational football when you're like, dude, we'll trade. You should be trading 8 yards for time on the clock. Let them complete that. And yet you're sucking up and then you're running some dagger behind it type of concept or some, you know, skinny post or some post or some in-cutting route. And Drew Lock is protected. You're rushing three. You know, you're basically playing patty cake. And he just rips a couple of balls in the middle of the field where he's best. He's best between the numbers when he keeps his body, his hip closed, his front hip closed, and stays on top of the football. And he can drive that ball when he's not pressured. And that's what you saw. And you saw him take advantage of that. And really, it was really, that essentially is the game that got Anthony Lynn and everybody fired. It got Gus Bradley fired, but it got everybody fired. That game.
Through two games of looking at Locke, the biggest takeaways are when this guy is either given time or he gives himself time by standing still in the pocket or manipulating and moving around the pocket correctly, he looks like a pretty good quarterback. He really does. I mean, there's a lot to like. But when he is, I mean, when the protection breaks down, that's no real quarterback's fault. But what is so obvious when you watch these two games is how much he perceives pressure. You're right.
And
how many plays break down because he sees or feels pressure that just isn't there yet.
Right. Here's one of my big takeaways on the perceived pressure, because there's a lot of perceived pressure, and he was not asked in college to understand protection. And this is something that Drew Lock, if he was on the program right now, would tell you he needs to be much better at. He needs to understand protections. Because there are guys who flash that drive him, that make him jump out of something, where a back is coming from, you know, a back is plussed over and he's got to work across the formation to the weak side. So he's plussed on the right side behind the tight end. He's got to work back to the weak side. And Drew Lock sees the flash and instantly starts to move. And here comes the back late. And that to me is, I don't understand. Like, I see it, and I'm like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And then the back comes out of your periphery where you don't see him. And that, to me, is a, you don't truly understand where you're protected, where you're not protected. And that's an issue. And there's the perceived pressure. And then half the time, you roll yourself into
correct
a bad throw or a pressure-packed, you know, throw.
Or never mind the fact that the moment that you perceive that pressure and you just bolt to your right, now you've taken away half the field.
Yeah.
I mean, more than half the field. Now you're dealing with about maybe 25% of the field that you can actually do something with. But that's the negative. The hope then is, hey, he learns, he continues to evolve, he continues to develop, understand protection, reading defenses, because when he does, when he stands there and he is compact, he's fundamental, he's got his body underneath him, he looks like a pretty good quarterback. He really does. You can understand why people like his potential while recognizing his flaws and what he needs to improve upon. Speaking of flaws, Nuggets don't really have flaws as much as they're dealing with a huge rash of injuries. How does that shape up for the playoffs? We'll talk to our Nuggets insider, George Karl. He'll join us coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Our Nuggets analyst, George Karl. Presented by Bet River Sportsbook, McGill's Hotel and Casino. He joins us now. George, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I'm getting mad at you guys. You know, the snow's done, man. No more snow.
Okay.
Oh, that's our fault.
That's on us. That's all. Hey, you know what we should be mad about is the injury issues. And I would ask you, with the time off, like with Barton and obviously Murray's not coming back, Gordon got hurt, Monte Morris has been out. Like, how concerned are you about the shape of your players when they come back, the rust, all those things, and fitting back into kind of the flow of a game?
It just brings about a little uncertainty to, you know, how rusty they're going to be, or, you know, there's a comfort zone that when you come back from an injury, it feels good, but you still got to make it game good. But, you know, that's part of coaching. I mean, I actually get a little tired of you guys and everybody talks about injuries, because injuries are part of the game. And I think the one thing I would be concerned of is all the injuries throughout the league. I mean, this has been a year where so many players have missed games and load management and COVID. And I think that's my whole look at the playoffs right now is uncertainty. I could not pick a team right now that I would say is going to win the NBA championship right now. It's going to be determined by the playoffs, wins in the playoffs, confidence that's gained in the playoffs, continuity and connection by a team that comes together in the playoffs. And I think it's a wide open season. I'm not saying the Denver Nuggets can win a championship, but I know they can win a playoff round or two. And I think what I'm seeing is Jokic taking responsibility, that I'm one of the best players in the game, probably top five players in the game. And instead of kind of being on cruise control once in a while, I'm jumping into every game and taking responsibility. And he has been magnificent. And I don't know if it's been spurred on by him trying to win the MVP or he just wants to get a better seeding in the playoffs.
Let's talk more about Nikola Jokic. The fact that he's going to win the MVP, I mean, that no matter how much ESPN tries to drum up a support for other candidates, it's going to be Jokic, and it's going to be Jokic in a landslide. It was called into question last week by a national commentator that, yeah, Jokic may be the MVP, but he'll go down as one of the weaker MVP seasons in maybe the last 30, 35 years. Nobody's a better student of this game than you are. So where would Jokic's MVP season rank for you among the MVP seasons of, let's say, the last 25 to 30 years?
Oh, man. I mean, I applaud, because I think we have seen a player progress, grow, mature, develop, and now his mental makeup of the game is getting stronger. Who's better in the game right now in the fourth quarter than Nikola? There is somebody. I mean, he doesn't always win the game, but does he always perform in the fourth quarter? Yes, he performs very well, passing the ball, rebounding the ball. He's become a little better defender in the fourth quarter than he has in the past. And you're talking about greatness. Why do we got to rank greatness? It's like, you know, do you mind if you go to heaven? Do you mind what part of heaven you're in? I mean, this guy's a special dude, and to bring that argument to the table is just a joke. Because I think it's a fantasytical comment that creates controversy and discussion. That's all it is.
You know, it's really interesting. You and I, we work together at ESPN. You know, you've been involved in the television world and been an analyst, and you see kind of how it goes, and it's funny to me, or interesting to me,
the desire that the networks have to push a narrative that it is CP3, or it is now all of a sudden it's Steph Curry making a push, and do these guys have legitimacy to overtake the Joker in the MVP race? What do you say to kind of the networks that push the narrative?
I think they're reprogramming their mistake. You know, Chris Paul had a great year all year long, and all of a sudden we're talking about him in the last month of the season. Why don't we talk about him when he's had a great year? What he's done in Oklahoma City, what he's done wherever he goes, Chris Paul brings a great product to that team. He's one of the best. He'll never get ahead of Stockton for me and Magic. But, I mean, Chris Paul is in the top 10 point guards ever in this game, and he's spectacular. What his mental maturity in this game is, not many players do what he does. And so I think it's a lot of times programming and reprogramming maybe somebody they forgot along the way. But Jokic has been there every day, consistent every day, and he's had six or seven different curveballs thrown to him by injuries on his team. And he says, no problem, coach. I'll take care of it. Well, I'll make it work. And that to me is greatness. The ability to have a difficult road and still find the answers is what Jokic has done as the leader of the Denver Nuggets.
George, as you head into this final week, and Nuggets are guaranteed to finish no lower than fourth, still need to be determined who they may play, but speaking specifically of Jokic, the guy has gone to the post every single night. I mean, the guy's been so durable. Do you, this week, if you're Michael Malone, do you try to pick some spots? Do you out-and-out load management rest him with the idea of, hey, I need you to be fresh and ready for the long haul of the playoffs, hopefully?
I think and it's never been comfortable for me to do that. Because I don't think you want to change a lot of your personality. Instead of maybe playing Jokic 35 minutes, you might play him 28 minutes. But I don't think you want to change drastically your personality because you've had all this uncertainty. And that Portland game, could come down to who Portland plays. I mean, if they win, they'll probably play some. They could very easily, if they win that game, move up to fifth. So there's going to be a little bit of, does Denver want to play Portland? Because if they bail on their lineup and give Portland the game without a fight, then they might be saying something. But I think we overread it. But I definitely think there's gamesmanship going on right now on who Denver knows who they really want to play. L.A. knows kind of who they probably want to play. But you still got to worry about playing the best basketball you can play. So that's always been my priority. I'm not going to give up my rhythm and my playing well to maybe circumvent the standings a little bit.
All right, George, man. We appreciate you, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight.
I will. It'll be fun. Let's have a great week, guys.
All right. Sounds good. George Karl, our Nuggets analyst, presented by Bet River Sportsbook, McGill's Hotel and Casino. I love that line. You get into heaven, you're going to complain where you're in heaven? No. I want to be over there.
Right.
That looks cool over there. No.
Yes.
Yeah, you talked to your buddy Nick Wright lately?
I haven't talked to Nick. Should I call him?
We should get him on. In case you missed it, one of Mark's cohorts at FS1 who said that Nikola Jokic would be the worst MVP of the last 35 years.
Why? He's having a great season, right?
He's having a great season. By every metric, by every stat, by every eye test, what do you see? The guy's having an amazing season. Changing the way that the position he plays is played.
Yeah.
And has been played. I mean, come on. I mean, are you telling me that his MVP season is less impactful, has changed the game less than what
Derrick Rose's MVP season was? Please. Or Steve Nash's MVP season? Come on. We got to get him on.
Yeah.
Let's get him on.
All right.
Plus, he could just admit that he's a Kansas City guy who just has a bias towards all things Denver.
It's true. He did pick Denver to only win four games. He was way off.
Yeah.
He won five. Way off.
I think he had him like 2-14, but all right. Anyway, be that as it may. All right, we'll come back. A lot to unpack here. Final thoughts next. Hey, we're excited about this. We have launched the Fan Store with a collection of swag, including limited edition Fan Jam t-shirts. You know the design. NBA Jam style with each show. So you got a t-shirt with our pictures on the front of it. Key stats from each one of us. My stats include once gave Orlando, Big Orlando, Fat Orlando, a run for his wing-eating money.
I like working the bone.
When I demolished 66 wings in one sitting.
It's impressive. It is impressive.
You got a preview of that when we were in Atlanta.
Yeah, you were.
We stopped for lunch at a Hooters, and it was all you can eat. Wings. I don't know, Wing Tuesday or something.
Right. You were impressive. Yeah, impressive. And this, like, we're all like, all right, let's get the bill. And you're like, well, you need wings? Are you kidding me? I'm going to be here for a while.
Yeah, you guys, guys want to go ahead, but I'm not leaving yet. I got more work to get done here.
And the most amazing thing, I couldn't take my eyes off your fingers. Because you got wing sauce on your fingers, and they looked like little Jimmy Deans. Because the color was kind of
copperish.
Yeah, copperish, and I'm like, those look like uncooked Jimmy Deans right there.
They shovel it into the sausage.
All right. Oh yeah, remember it well. Yep.
Do you remember it well, or does it haunt you to this day?
No, it doesn't. Yeah, I wouldn't say that it haunts me. It just was like, I was like, there's certain things you see in your life where you're like, man, I wish I was that passionate about anything. Like the way you eat wings, I was like,
right,
anything.
Right.
If I was just that passionate about anything.
Right. Right. You know, it's like how people always say, if only I could find somebody that looks at me the way you look at Tom Brady, for example. Right.
Yeah. The way you savor a wing.
Yeah.
I mean, just like your grubby little fingers and your little teeth on it. You're like, all right.
Working the bone.
Yeah.
So anyway, you can get your Fan Jam t-shirts and much more. Get them now at denverfan.com/store. So you've already started now. The rest of the shows are going to be commenting still. Fan Film Room on the Charger game.
Mm-hmm.
You've already started looking ahead to the Atlanta game.
I'm already through that.
Yeah. Wow, you just love. Is it fair to say you love grinding through film like I enjoy grinding through wings?
No, that's not. I mean, that's not like I love it, but it's not like, you know,
a reason to live.
Right. You're like, it's not
a life's ambition.
Yeah, you know, I just like looking at, I like looking at the concepts. Like, what are you trying to run? What are you trying to create? You know, how are you trying to set yourself up? Like I told you in that game against the Chargers with Bridgewater, how many times they were squatting on the short stuff. In third down and 8-, and through the whole game, they're squatting, and all of a sudden you take a shot down the field, a little stutter go type of, and the corner just bites on it. And it's a beautifully thrown ball to DJ Moore. And you know, it's a 45-yard gain or whatever, like just how you set things up and what you're trying to accomplish in certain formations. And I find that stuff kind of fascinating.
Well, it through the first two games of watching Teddy Bridgewater and watching Drew Lock side by side, one thing is crystal clear. Drew Lock has to come back and show the Broncos and us that there is a whole lot more polish to his game if he has any hope of beating out Bridgewater. Because one thing you can say about Bridgewater is that his talent may not jump off the screen.
Right.
But man, if I'm a coach and I'm looking at it as, hey, I'm prepared to try to run the football, I'm prepared to, you know, win with my defense, keep games close, and all I want of my quarterback is don't make a costly mistake, Bridgewater jumps off the page and it jumps off the screen in that regard.
Right. I think there's a couple things that you could see, like watching tape, you can see that Bridgewater kind of pre-snap knows where he, like, diagnosed and knows where he wants to go with the ball. Like, that's pretty apparent. And, you know, and he throws it with accuracy and he throws it with timing. A lot underneath stuff and all that thing. I would say the other thing, you know, with Drew Lock, obviously there's the potential of upside is far more grand.
That's the thing too. That's the other thing is that you see. Yeah, you do see the potential with Drew. There are those plays. There are those throws where you're like, wow.
Yeah, but I the thing that jumps off.
I can win with that.
But the thing that jumps off more to me, like people get enamored by potential. And Big O is about to come in here. Big O will tell you, potential gets you fired. Like, people get so enamored with potential. Like, I want consistency. I want guys that can do the little things well. And one of the things that for me jumps off the film is the amount of perceived pressure. Mm-hmm. And the lack of understanding of protection.
Yep.
And not knowing where you're protected, not knowing where you're not protected, how to buy yourself time on a free runner. You know, you get a free runner. Hey, man, sometimes we can't pick them all up. Sometimes you're going to get a free runner. And instead of rolling into a guy who's blocked and taking a sack, can you work away from that guy? Can you buy yourself another half a second or another second from that free run? Like, there's just so many things that you'll watch that to me say, you didn't take a sack, but you took a pressure where you didn't need to take a pressure.
Right.
And then you threw an errant ball or you threw a pick.
Right.
Or you had an incompletion because it shocked you.
Yeah.
You weren't expecting it. And that tells me you didn't know who had who. You didn't know what we were doing. That's a problem.
It's a problem, yes. Is it correctable? Is it something you can learn?
Everything is.
Or is it all?
Sure.
But is it? Well, you say that. You say, sure, this is fixable, that's mm-hmm. learnable. But at some point, is something just become? It's your default mechanism. It's your default fallback. And no matter how much you work at it, in the heat of the moment, that's what you revert back to.
Well, I think there's, yes, I think your default mechanism is athleticism. But again, you came from a program where you ran three verticals and you had two verticals and six, seven man protections every time. So you didn't have to worry about hots. You didn't have to worry about free runners. You didn't have to worry about where I am and where I'm not protected. Like, there's a learning curve that goes on there. So that's just part of the quote-unquote process.
All right, you know the hockey guys, Sandy and Orlando, have thoughts on the Avs' big win last night. Was it a preview of a team that's ready to win hard-nosed, low-scoring, get-to-the-front-of-the-net playoff hockey? We'll hear from them coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.